Good afternoon. Everybody take their seats, please. Okay, let's get this ball rolling. Mark, would you come up to the table, please? So what you saw this morning are a bulleted list of recommendations from staff. I think based on some of the questions from the board, Mark's got a couple of points he wants to make. And then what we've done is we're going to throw some draft motions that line up with the recommendations upon the thing. We'll do one at a time. We're not going to do a giant one. And we'll work through all of them and see where we end up, okay? So, let me ask Tricia, before we get started down this road, I forgot to ask, is there anybody signed up for general public comment this afternoon?
You have to believe so.
So, Mark, I might have to excuse you for a second.
I'll find that.
Just one? Ken Miller. So Ken, you've already had one shot today.
I used 3.5 minutes this morning. I'll use 2.5 today. This afternoon. That's what I was going to do. So I'm still Ken Miller, Chairman Bernath, members of the board. So myself and Steve Bottermeyer, we're representing Washington Farm Forestry Association. TFW policy continuing the work of the recently retired Dick Miller. My particular focus continues to be towards the forest and fish required alternate harvest prescriptions for small forest landowners. Staff may also indicate later today, we're happy to report the science review process has been approved in TFW policy. We anticipate continuing to work on portions of the draft within the policy while awaiting the science review. In the collaborative spirit, we'll be sharing a thorough small forest landowner perspective at a future TFW policy meeting in hopes of increasing other stakeholder understanding of the broader issues and opportunities. And we'll be meeting later with individual stakeholders to ensure that we understand their major concerns. Additionally, it's our hope that we will be able to bring recommendations back to you by, and I left a question mark there because I really don't have any idea. I would hope within a year, but we'll just have to see what happens. And finally, and once again, I'm inviting the board to visit our tree farm here in Olympia as part of your 2017 work plan, so you can at least get a visual impression of what's in the Westside template proposal. Without involving yourselves in the adaptive management process, I think it's important to thousands of small landowners that you show an interest with a visit to a demonstration site, as you have with other critical issues and other important constituents. That's all I have.
Thank you, Ken. All right, now Mark.
Okay.
Oh. Yes, board member Gilbert.
Thank you. I'd just like to echo the testimony that we just heard, and I would hope that with our busy schedule that we could go out there and take a look at this, because I've been out there and looked at it. I think it would be helpful for the board to understand what the process is. So thank you.
Okay. Okay, so back, I'll repeat what I already said. Mark's going to give a couple of introductory comments, and then we're going to throw the first motion up on the screen and work through these.
So, good afternoon. I'm Mark Engel with Forest Practices. I forgot to state that this morning. So, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the board. So, in the testimony, after the staff recommendations, I think the board got a better idea of how committed policy caucuses are towards creation of a permanent water piping system rule. Heard a lot of passion in the presentations, and you continue to hear some the presentation of preferred options and solutions. However, that's not for the board today. The board instead needs to establish the next steps for how we're going to arrive at a permanent water piping system rules and draft guidance, and allowing the board to direct staff to file the SARA 102 and initiate formal rulemaking. So what I'm going to do is I'll read each one of ours, then we'll project a draft motion. The motion is going to be in the image of our recommendation, and I'll make a few comments for each one. So the first one, however, is just the
not here.
Well, we need the motion.
We cut her off.
No, I did not.
So the first motion is regarding the board directing staff to file CR 101.
So let's start off. Would somebody like to move this motion, please?
So moved.
Thank you, Board Member Balish. Do I have a second? Yes, please.
I move the Forest Practice Board direct staff to file a CR 101 pre-proposal statement of inquiry to notify the public the board is considering rulemaking relating to a permanent water piping system.
We have a second.
Second.
Thank you. So let's start off. Is there any board discussion around this motion? So I'll just emphasize, if you recall, the rulemaking process is a three-step process. The CR 101 is just telling the public that we're considering rulemaking. There are no timelines associated with the CR 101, and it just names the topic. Correct?
That's correct. It also will name the two current rules, 222-1603 and 031.
And any other rules that could get changed in the process, right?
Right.
Like 010-1610 or whatever. I'm
certain it'll be 030 and 031.
You're certain about that, but we'll have to.
Yeah, we'll look into it, but it's just a matter of allowing the public to know which rules the board is considering rulemaking for.
Any discussion from the members or questions? If not, I would ask board members to support the motion by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion passes. Thank you.
The next recommendation is for regarding.
Yeah, hold on a second. Board members.
Sorry about that. I was wondering if with the rest of these, that we can go through all of them prior to. It's a little bit like making sure all the pieces fit together, and that we're happy with all of the language and how it relates to each other before we approve all of them. So can we sort of go through and, or is it violating process rules to have discussion and change language prior to even
moving
them. Yeah.
Mark could go through the proposed motions. I would suggest we go through the next five and leave the last one as a separate one, just so that you can see them. Mm-hmm. And then we come back and somebody needs to do the motion so that we can discuss it.
Okay, the next motion is a motion on acceptance of the policy consensus recommendations. This motion will not result in a filing the draft language for inclusion in CR 102. This is just an interim step to develop language while we're getting recommendations for the remaining parts that are needed for the permanent water typing system rule. And it's, again, in the image of the recommendation this morning, where staff would prepare rule language and prepare board amendment 23 as necessary, and consultation with stakeholders to be presented to the board at their May 2017 meeting. This is all very consistent with the rule and how these the rule and board manual are prepared. And then the note is, again, the emphasis that this will not result in rulemaking as a standalone, but there will be other elements added to this.
Okay. And clarifying questions as opposed to discussion. Okay, why don't you throw the next one out there?
The next one is the policy has brought forward a recommendation for the development of the fish habitat assessment method. One thing I'd like to clarify is that this motion is not to develop alternatives, but to actually develop the fish habitat assessment method, a singular. The alternatives will have to be addressed during this time frame between now and the May meeting.
Question of clarification for members of
That seems like it's not in line with discussion that we heard yesterday. I mean, it doesn't reflect sort of my understanding of this matrix. So I don't know if now is the time to discuss it or not, but it seems like it's focusing on one recommendation to the exclusion of expression by many caucuses wanting there to be a process to develop other alternatives, and that needs to be reflected in a motion. And so if it's not this motion, then we need to add one to make sure that happens.
And that is a very viable concept to consider. At the moment, there was discussion of one. However, if you think about the next questions and the issues that are going to come before policy, we very may well be in a situation where the board is given either a majority-minority from which to choose from, or there have been instances such as the Forest Practices Hydraulic Projects, where there are a number of methods in which an individual could design a crossing and to meet fish protection standards. So it doesn't take away that there could be more than one, but this is around that singular concept of what the board's process would be.
Mark, there was no intention in this, just to clarify, there was no intention not to consider alternatives.
That's correct.
It's just suggesting that when it comes back, a methodology, or I guess you could put methodologies with an S after it, needs to come back to the board in May.
Correct. That is correct. That's the intent.
Clarify, right, so and then we can argue about it once we move it.
Okay, so Patricia, so after you present
Well, let's not
complete methodology.
Let's move on to the next motion, and then we can deal with those as we.
All right, so the next three motions are all worded the same, with the exception of the topic for discussion. The staff recommends keeping them separated so they can each be addressed in and of themselves, that there may be, it leaves room for full consensus, or if we do need to go to dispute resolution, we can go to dispute and develop majority-minority options. But it, in separating them, it allows that very fine focus that Board Member Davies has asked for, where we know concisely what the issues are and the topic being addressed, and where one part would not necessarily bring all the parts down. So it's focusing policies look at each individual. I had originally put in the staff recommendation that there's this is two options, either to develop consensus recommendations or initiate dispute resolution. In either case, a full report does need to come to the board at the February meeting, either in the form of recommendations or a full report as to the dispute resolution process, when it was called, what the particulars are, and you know, the progress to date. Also, as a reminder, and this is separate from the adaptive management rule in 12045, at any point, policy could have a vote of futility and then bring forward options to the board based on a full consensus that a specific topic or issue, any further progress would be futile. So the first one is, they're all there. So directing policy to determine at or before their December 2016 meeting, if consensus recommendations related to off-channel habitat can be presented to the board at the February meeting. It also offers the option for dispute resolution. The second one is the same wording. The topic is recommendations related to the acceptance of the completed type FM points through the water type modification forms. And the third one is how to use physicals, or whether they can be used to make a determination for that type FM regulatory point on the ground.
Questions or clarification? Okay, let's do the next one, please.
So the last one is the science piece, and it's initiating science, and it's the approval of funding for two specific elements that have been identified within the overall science strategy, that being the refining and redevelopment of the model and preparation of the study design for field validation, as well as the study design to evaluate the existing physical habitat criteria, the physical defaults.
All right, let's go back to the first one after the one we just. So, the motion on consensus recommendations. Do I have a motion? Someone can move this motion, please.
I'll do it if I can read it.
Here,
thanks, Patricia. I move the Forest Practice Board to accept the TFW Policy Committee consensus recommendations for a permanent water typing system and direct staff to prepare draft rule language, prepare Board Manual 23. As necessary in consultation with stakeholders, to be presented to the board at their May 2017 meeting. Note, until the board receives recommendations from policy for the fish habitat assessment methodology, off-channel habitat, use of physicals, and the status of existing type FM regulatory breakpoints established through water type modification forms, the staff will not be able to finish this assignment.
I have a second.
I'll second.
Thank you. Discussion. Board Member Warren.
I was just going to see for the restore, if the parenthetical phrase meant what you were hoping for in terms of timing.
Thank you, Board Member Warren. Yeah, I wanted to offer an amendment if I could, and that would be to strike on the very last line, or the second to last line, strike be able to finish this assignment and be more directive. And so we replace that language with move the rulemaking forward to a CR 102. And what I'm trying to do there is just ensure that the entire package moves forward, not pieces of it.
Patricia, add the word to the back.
What?
You struck A.
What, you want that word?
No,
staff will not be able to move the rulemaking forward to a CR 102.
I wanted to be more directive. Staff will not move.
Oh. Oh, well, and strike the word be able then. Mm-hmm.
What?
Just
hmm?
Move the rulemaking forward. So
not move, right?
Is there a friendly amendment to both the mover and the seconder?
It's friendly. Yeah, I guess so.
Take your time. I want to get these right.
Trying to make sure I understand what the language means. So, if we get something through dispute resolution, minority, majority reports or whatever, is that recommendations from policy? So if it goes to dispute, this would, you see what I'm saying? It says, until the board receives recommendations from policy. Is that what we get from dispute resolution? If it's
resolved? Yeah, I mean, if it's a consensus decision,
yeah, I understand
through policy. Yeah. If it's not, it's a minority-majority report,
which
adaptive management administrator would bring it to us.
Okay, and that falls under recommendations from policy. That's why I want to make sure, is that we are preventing us from acting in the event of a dispute.
Yeah, we can. Another friendly amendment, Patricia. So, these recommendations from policy or the adaptive management administrator.
So to me, as long as it doesn't preclude us from receiving disputed reports and moving ahead to CR1.
Well, remember, the note is just, it's really intended to remind us that we won't have a complete package until we get these other pieces.
Mr. Chair, could I offer another amendment after the AMPA? If the recommendations are coming as a result of dispute resolution, because this is open-ended right now, where it could imply that AMPA could just write recommendations without
AMPA.
So then you're suggesting spell it out a little further, or majority-minority report from the AMPA.
resulting from dispute resolution process, because that's the avenue in which those recommendations would be brought forward.
Okay, where does it go?
Dash.
That's fine.
So. Tell me where to move it.
You could say, for those recommendations resulting from dispute resolution. Well, yeah.
I thought that's what you said.
No, leave it where it was after the AMPA, but it's, it would be from policy or the AMPA, and then you could say for those recommendations resulting from dispute resolution. So it's if dispute resolution happens, then the AMPA will bring forward.
It may not be recommendations, it may be majority.
That's what I was
okay, so then you can make it majority or minority report. But that's just adding clarity.
I suggest this, put or a majority-minority report from the AMPA. That's okay. Resulting from. Okay.
Yeah, that's
better.
Welcome. Any other discussion on this motion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. The motion passes. Next motion, please. This is about the fish habitat assessment.
Very quick.
Okay, would somebody please read the motion? Make the motion. Thank you. Nobody wants the motion to move forward?
I remember Capper. Mr. Chair, I move the Forest Practice Board accept the TFW Policy Committee recommended process to develop the fish habitat assessment methodology and direct policy to work with the Adaptive Management Program Administrator to evaluate and develop consensus recommendations and present the completed methodology for board consideration and action at their May 27th meeting.
You do the
rest. Thank you, Board Member Bell. Discussion. Board Member Sweeney.
Who had the second?
Heather.
Second.
Lisa did.
Oh, Lisa did.
I had to.
Yeah. So this discussion is about clarification, just to make sure. I mean, maybe the language is okay, but I want to make sure that I understand. So I'm looking at the TFW Policy Committee modifications of DNR services presented recommendations. This is version that came out 1025. So number two, it talks about policy will take the three proposals that came out of the FN technical group and include up to three additional proposals. So I just want to make sure that that language is including the fact that there's going to be alternatives considered in what the methodology is going to be. I get that at the outcome, we want one methodology, but I want to make sure that the input into this process is correctly allowing for what was agreed upon.
We could add additional language for clarification, something like TFW Policy Committee recommended process to consider alternatives and develop
a
Yeah, you could do it. Yeah. That would then totally capture the process.
Thank you.
So pluralize alternatives.
Thank you. Anybody else? Any other discussion on this motion? Okay. All those in favor of this motion as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Thank you. Next motion. So the next one, as he indicated, there are three in a row here, but they're all identical. Take one at a time, unless you like to do otherwise. Can you roll that down one line? Yeah, there we go. If I could have a motion, please, from somebody. Thank you, Board Member Storr.
I can't read on the side of my head. So I move the Forest Practices Board direct the TFW Policy Committee to determine at or before their December 2016 meeting if consensus recommendations related to off-channel habitat can be presented to the board at the February 2017 meeting, or the TFW Policy Committee initiates and completes dispute resolution by May 1st, 2017. Policy will deliver consensus recommendations per as a result of dispute resolution, or the adaptive management program administrator will deliver the majority / minority report at the May 2017 board meeting per WAC 222-12-045, close print.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Awesome.
Board Member Sedin. Any discussion?
I'm understanding the parenthetical phrase. I mean, why is it a parenthesis? Policy will deliver consensus recommendation.
Probably.
Why is there earth before the word animals?
It doesn't necessarily have to be there.
No.
It doesn't.
I take it. It makes sense if it's not there.
Okay.
If it's there, it makes good reasons
to remove the parentheses.
Yeah.
Okay. Friendly amendment to these motions. Okay. Any other discussion? It's getting late in the day already. Everybody in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Thank you. Excellent. I'm assuming that you'll want to take grants out of this one as well. Actually, we got them in different places on this one.
Oh, you're right. There's a second. There's one after resolution.
Yeah. Third. To the bottom line, Patricia.
Yeah, I can see it. This one here?
No, two lines.
Oh, there we go.
All right, can I have a motion, please?
Technical question. Does that say it's because we should have made first 2017?
Mm-hmm. Completes.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
So, if I
may
first, so we have recommendations by the May 4th.
Correct.
Okay. So, you have to read it.
No.
Sorry.
Nope. I know. It's
that's hard to read.
Board Member Balish.
I move the Forest Practices Board direct the TFW Policy Committee to determine at or before their December 2016 meeting if consensus recommendations related to acceptance of completed tied FN points through water piping modification forms as the regulatory fish habitat points in the fish habitat water piping map can be presented to the board at their February 2017 meeting, or the TFW Policy Committee initiates and completes dispute resolution by May 1st, 2017. Policy will deliver consensus recommendations as a result of dispute resolution, or the Adaptive Management Program Administrator will deliver the majority minority report at the May 2017 board meeting per WAC 222-12-005.
Second, please. Got a couple. Thank you. Board Member Davies. Any discussion on this one? None of this precludes policy bringing us stuff earlier than May. The optimist.
Okay.
All right. Everybody in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion passes. Thank you. More on this one. Remove the parentheses, please, in the same spot as the last one. Patricia, please remove the parentheses.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Somebody please make the motion. Board Member Jack.
I move the Forest Practices Board direct the TFW Policy Committee to determine at or before the December 2016 meeting if consensus recommendations related to the manner in which default physicals will be used to determine the type FN points as the regulatory fish habitat points in the fish habitat water typing map can be presented to the board at the February 2017 meeting, or the TFW Policy Committee initiates dispute resolution and completes it by May 1st, 2017. Policy will deliver consensus recommendations as a result of dispute resolution, or the Adaptive Management Program Administrator will deliver the majority-minority report at the May 2017 board meeting per WAC 222-12-045.
Thank you. I have a second.
Second.
Board Member Gunther, thank you. Any discussion? All in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes. Thank you. Last one. Would somebody please move this?
I'll make this motion.
Thank you, Board Member Lori.
I move Forest Practices Board approve funding for continued development of the water typing fish habitat model in evaluation of default physical criteria using existing fund balance in the Forest and Fish Support account. Funding up to $500,000 is authorized before 30 June 2017 to refine and develop the model and prepare a study design for field validation and create a study design to evaluate the existing default physical habitat criteria. Funding is contingent on consensus from the TFW's policy committee.
Second.
Second.
Thank you, Board Member Balish. Discussion. Board Member Jackie.
You know, I have to say that the $500,000 spend gives me quite a bit of heartache. And I don't like to disrupt process, and I don't want to thwart good science activities. But, you know, perhaps it could be more, I don't know, maybe it's more clear as to what we're getting between those two items. But the argument, you know, I come from a financial background, so the argument that we're going to spend it because
bill disappear after June 30th is not a real compelling argument for me. So I'm and heading down the path with the LIDAR work, while it's important, perhaps, it's a pretty daunting. I mean, if you look at the overall cost of going down a LIDAR-based project, I don't want to spend $500,000 here and $500,000 there and then end up facing a much larger, you know, so we grab the beast, but we can't even hold on to the leash. I don't know, Hans, maybe you could give me a level of comfort about how $500,000 can be spent in the next 7 months.
It's a very good question. Thank you for asking. It's something that I certainly wrestle with as well in all of these projects. Part of it is the bite-sized piece that we can take. We know that there are things that can be done tomorrow on improving the model that are going to be beneficial for anything moving forward as some kind of a field validation to see if the beast is well enough put together that we can get a hold of it. So the first step there is to just get the leash on the beast. And so I don't
know. Not if you continue that analogy.
The point is that the fully developed LIDAR model that's a map for use in water typing is a very large project. Huge. And as we speak, LIDAR is being acquired by different entities that will be paramount to the success of that project ultimately, but also for other purposes is really the benefits. There's other benefits. So on the model part of it, just this initial testing to see if it's even worth pursuing, I think has a lot of merit, because we can walk away at that point. And we'll still have a product that will be useful. Now, the $500,000, part of that is because the study design piece of that, looking at the bigger pictures that we're wrestling with, these two, the physicals, permanent natural barriers, we talked about off-channel habitats separately, and then also the model, they're big unknowns. There's a lot of evidence that there's science that will be helpful in informing it. But we have to see what that's going to look like. And in order to see what it's going to look like, we have to take off a fairly big bite to develop the study design, to do the work to define what the ultimate use and objectives of the water typing model project would look like, and start to construct some vision of where it could go and how it could be used. And understanding this issue of accuracy and shared risk where there's uncertainty, et cetera, we have to figure that. We have to figure those details out. And by putting it in a study design piece with outside experts, really giving this a thorough examination, it's going to take some money. It's going to take a fair amount of effort. And right now, the physicals have been identified separately from the model. There may be a way to link them together. It may cost much less than that. But we're concerned about not having resources in between now and February to start fleshing some of those details out. And that's the concern. When we come back in February, I will give a report on where we are. We'll have more certainty about what the range of possibilities are. We'll have a better idea of the budget. Policy will have a chance, obviously, through consensus to figure out what they really want between now and then. But without that, we'll be stuck. And then we may be in a situation where we wish we would have started earlier and started getting some contracts together and putting the pieces together. So that, I understand your trepidation, and I'd be worried if you didn't have some, I suppose.
So, and I guess I'd just add is funding is contingent on the policy group actually having an agreement on moving forward on each of these items.
That was a question I was going to ask as a prognosticator, what you think the probability is of the nine caucuses all agreeing.
You don't actually have to answer that.
There's still work to do. I had some good conversations yesterday following the discussion that we had about LIDAR, also physicals, and there's interest, I think, in both areas, but that will have to be obviously worked out before anything happens.
I mean, board member Jackie, would you like something on there to talk about reporting back in February on whether a study design was agreed to or the parameters around those things, something? Do you want to add anything to this motion to help tighten it up?
Do we really have to add that to a motion just to get a report back from staff?
No. Absolutely not.
I was trying to make you comfortable. Thank you. And I would hope we get a report back. Yes. Okay. I just wanted to make sure you're comfortable. Okay. For member Davies. There isn't a timeline on here for the project, for the developing the model, and I just wonder if it would be helpful to add one, or if that would be too difficult because it is such a big project.
That's it.
Well, we have 6 months to spend the money, or 6, 7, 8 months to spend the money. And I'm assuming, Hans, that we thought the redevelopment of the model could happen in that time frame.
Yes.
And what could not be done is actual field validation. So what he's suggesting is that you get the study design to do field validation. So even this step, if it's completed, will not be a green light for the model to go forward yet.
But you'll have a pilot model that you could then use to test following June.
The goal would be that there would be a study that had all of the details worked out that with funding in the next biennium could be initiated and completed for an actual project. But we don't have the time to complete a project between now and the end of the current biennium. And so the funds that we're talking about are only through June 2017. Anything past that date, we haven't identified. So this would be a shelf-ready study design that the board could consider whether or not to give any kind of green light for the next step.
So just a reminder to board members, in May, you'll be presented with the next biennium budget so you can make decisions on priorities that will be recommended by policy to the board on expenditures.
Okay. So does that $500,000 include the acquisition of some LIDAR data? Is that why it's so big?
No, not necessarily. No, in fact, probably not. There probably wouldn't be time to acquire and process the LIDAR and time to use it for study design. It's an up to amount because we really need to flesh out what some of those details are before we know what it would take. In other words, in looking at the available information to date and with what the university has already been working on, they have a good structure for what the fixes in the model look like from a technical perspective. So the things that Luke and others, Jeff, talked about in August, they'll start working on those pieces. And at the same time, a parallel process is going to happen where there's a group of experts that are going to get together and start putting together what a scope and a study would look like to do this field validation step. And so there's going to be two processes with the same goal of teeing up a LIDAR field validation phase of the water typing model within the next 8 months. So both of those processes, again, depending on consensus, but could be done by the end of the biennium. So we know what to expect if we decide or if you actually decide to go forward to the next phase. So those things would happen together. And the reason it's expensive is because it may require purchasing LiDAR that's already available or getting it from different sources publicly available, et cetera, to better inform that study design. It may need to look at data, crunch some numbers, start doing some pilot evaluation to inform the study design. Okay. There's work that goes into a study design other than just, kind of talking about it.
Okay, any other concerns or discussion on this point? I'll wait until you're...
You should go ahead.
Okay. Just checking in. Make sure you didn't have a problem. Okay. Any other discussion from board members on this motion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Thank you very much. All right.
Let's talk on.
All right, Danelle. So just to lead off on this item on our maps, several of the public commented earlier today, this update I consider a significant milestone. As you may recall, one of the cornerstones of the Forest and Fish Report was a commitment to fix roads in the near term as a 50-year agreement, while riparian areas grow back, providing shade and largely debris to streams to restore the five riparian functions needed for fish habitat and water quality. Road fixes were the mitigation required in the short term, while riparian areas grew back over the following decades. Large forest landowners were given 15 years initially to fulfill this commitment. That commitment was renewed and expanded for those companies impacted by the recession and unable to achieve the initial commitment. There's been a significant investment, as noted by several others today, both by private landowners and the state on state-owned forest lands to repair, abandon, or upgrade roads and fish passage barriers. Large private landowners committed to do this without any state assistance. Danelle is here to provide us an update on the RMAPs that were to be complete by October 31 of this year. And for those landowners that didn't ask for extensions. She'll also be sharing with the board how compliance is likely to be used regarding non-compliant landowners. And finally, I just wanted to say that board member Lori and I will be our respective agencies will be looking at a way to celebrate these successes in the near future. So, Danelle.
Good afternoon, board members. My name is Danielle Meehan, and I am the Forest Practices Assistant Vision Manager for Operations. I'll be giving you an overview of RMAPs, and I'm going to be iterative of some of the stuff that Stephen already, Chairman Burnett, stated earlier. My apologies. And kind of give you some larger picture overview, too, for those that haven't been fully immersed in RMAPs. So large forest landowners were required to have all roads within their ownership covered under a DNR-approved RMAP by July 1, 2006 and bring all roads into compliance with forest practices standards by October 31st, 2016. Rules were reconnoitered in 2011, and that was due to the economic downturn. And two things happened. One was the original date was extended to October 31st, 2016, and the extension piece came into play where landowners would be able to acquire an extension of their work through October 31st, 2021. The 31st date is imperative because it allows landowners to complete their field operations during the dry season and within their appropriate fish windows. And landowners selected anniversary dates. So what they would do is they would complete their operational work over the summer, and then during that downtime of that following season, they would do two things. That one, they would report all the work that had been done in that previous operational season. And then the second piece is they would complete an annual accomplishment report. And those reports were staggered purposely so that we wouldn't get a bunch of landowners turning in our master in a certain time frame and be inundated with 260 R maps at once. And if you have questions during the presentation, please ask. So this is a chart from 2001 to 2015, and what this shows is all the operational work that's reported complete as of December 31st, 2015. So 260 R maps have been approved. Large landowners, there are some small forest landowners in this. Some large landowners have multiple R maps for their land ownership within each region, in our region area. Miles of road assessed. These were where an inventory was conducted, an assessment of all forest roads contained within a specific R map. Miles of road improved. This is the improved road or road segments defined as locations where actions have been taken to address issues associated with fish passage, delivery of sediment to waters, existing or potential slope instability that could adversely affect public resources or threaten public safety, roads or ditch lines that intercept groundwater, roads or ditches that deliver surface water. And if any of you have more questions about what I'm stating, you can go to the annual HCP report, and it goes into this into great detail. The miles of road officially abandoned, these are official requests to DNR in writing to abandon portions of roads. So at this point, 83% of fish barriers have been fixed, and 3,507 miles of habitat have been opened for fish use. So at this point, 182 RMAPs will be complete by 2016. That's their operational work. And landowners, some landowners are completely done, but other landowners are in the process of completing that paperwork. And again, that anniversary date is the trigger, so anywhere from December through April we'll be getting those annual reports with all that information. 58 RMAP extensions were applied for and approved. Let's go back a bit. At this point, where the reports from the regions, we'll have 20 RMAPs that will not be completed, where landowners committed to being complete by October 31st, 2016, and they also did not apply for extensions. Which leads us to the next phase, which is discussions around enforcement. And the way we're looking at this, number one, as landowners come to us, we complete an informal conference note, and we report based on the landowner's report of their work being done. So that's where we finalize an RMAP. Another part of our process is working with landowners that have not completed their RMAP work, and we have varying landowners that we're engaging with that are not complete. Those 20, some of them have 3 to 4 pipes left to replace, so very minimal amount. They've been letting us know, communicating with us the entire time, letting us know that they were unable to complete those, and working with us and letting us know the timeline and when those will be done. Some landowners have scheduled quite a few too many pipes, a dozen or more, for final operating season, and they just were unable within that time frame to get all that work completed. Very few landowners are not working with us, but we do have a few. But each circumstance will be evaluated on its own merit. We start with the lowest level of enforcement and we make our way up. In some of these situations, we're going to be starting with a notice to comply that will be a violation. And we may begin some with stop work orders based on the level of potential mitigation or resource damage that might occur. These could go up to civil penalties, but again, we'll weigh each landowner based on the merit of what they're doing, the time frame that they're committed to doing. We'll be documenting all of that on notices to comply and working through that process. Any questions?
Questions from board members on the RMAP today. Board Member Ward.
So how much, that's great to see, really, as this is a very big success. So annual reports is a way of keeping track. Do we have other, I guess I'm just not clear on what the compliance, you know, how do we evaluate that they are done, you know? So the landowner has started out a plan and verifies that they've completed these updates. Do we do any field checking or reviewing?
We do conduct field review. As you can imagine, some of these are quite extensive.
Yeah,
I won't say that we've visited 100%.
55,000 miles.
Right, right. But 100% compliance has not been conducted, so it's based on a prioritization process of very large fills. You know, you've got 30, 40 feet of fill on top of a pipe.
That's what you're saying. So where you know the most work has had to be done?
And scrutiny of where you're replacing some in the early days, you know, 12-inch culvert being replaced with a 18 or 24. Those will receive lower priority depending on the situations. But the larger ticket items, lower in the drainage, definitely are worth the focus and effort. And it's just not DNR out there too. We've got people from ecology, we have people from Fish and Wildlife, and folks from the tribes, tribal biologists. So as a group, you know, that collective is able to look at some things together, and we've also dispatched some of our forest practice foresters, so it's not just the RMAP specialists conducting the work. Forest practices foresters are also helping review some of this. So it's a multi-personnel effort for sure.
Part of the presumption, particularly in regions where we have had RMAP specialists fairly continuously in that spot for a long time, you know, they're tracking these from year to year because the landowners have had to report annually on what they accomplished and what they're proposing to do the following year. And then remember that any fish passage barrier requires a permit. So there's the permit compliance also taking place on top of that. So it's there's eyes multiple times on the ground for different reasons. But as she said, there's if you're thinking we did 100% compliance job on all 182 things that right at the end, we probably did not, but we're trying to be smart about this too. Any other questions for Danelle on the RMAPs update? Cool. Okay. If you would stay there, please, Danelle.
Oh, back to RMAPs. Stay in place, right? Yes.
Stay in place.
Gotcha.
You're on the agenda for the next one as well. So I think it was Board Member Stanley that after we passed the board manual 6 months ago, you asked the operational folks to come back and give us a six-month update on the implementation of Board Manual 16. So, sorry, Danelle is here to do that.
So do you want me to do I have to do that for the record, Patricia? Reintroduce myself again? Okay, we're good to go. So we're going to roll into this based on, thank you for the intro. There's Chair Bernath. Now I don't have to say that. So we'll go through the Section 16 update. As we know, a rule adopted February 2015 went through. Section 16 of the board manual was approved May of 2016. And training was conducted by Department of Natural Resources staff. And how we did that is we conducted training with our own DNR staff and then asked our DNR regional staff to turn around and conduct various trainings across the state at their timber, fish, and wildlife meetings and through other mechanisms, email, et cetera, of engaging with landowners to inform them. While Section 16 was being created, the Operations Region Outreach staff were creating the training. Prior to presenting the training, we worked with large landowners to ensure the information was easily understood. We were asked to present that and did work with large and some small forest landowners on that. We did go around and conduct the training and completed all of that training by June of this year. And what we've done with individuals, landowners, stakeholder reviewers that have seen the paperwork that's been presented, there have been two iterations of questions 11 and 12 and two iterations of the slope stability informational form. And as with anything, when you do something new, you find that there are opportunities for clarification and making sure that everyone that's engaging in our process understands the questions, understands the intent and what that request means, including reviewers, the general public, and the landowners trying to provide that information. So we have made edits and we'll see if we need to continue to make edits.
Now, can you remind the board what questions 11 and 12 on the FPA are?
I certainly can. Not by rote, but it's are you working on
or around?
Well, it's in unstable slopes, and then the second question is around. Check back to my official rule keepers. And the slope stability informational form was a voluntary process that asked landowners different questions so that we can get more information to understand what was done, what did they look at, what tools did they use to convey that information to us, and where that helps us and reviewers is where a qualified expert report may not be necessary. So landowners are doing a fairly good job of providing the information. Landowners are working with their qualified experts to make sure that they're following the rules and providing information, landowners providing information, the slope stability form, that is part of required process now. And providing, making sure that the QE mitigation, so qualified expert reports will provide mitigations in the report, but what we like to see is that information provided in question 31. That allows us to see what mitigation the landowner is actually implementing. And then we have a paperwork process that we may follow through on, and that's making sure that the information in the FPA slope stability information form, and if there's been a qualified expert report, memo, letter, or a SEPA, if it's a class four special, that all that information matches. So that's a processing piece for us, but making sure that all those components are telling us the same story is very important. And landowners are doing a good job at that. We're continuing to make strides to make sure that information continues to come in. If landowners are not providing this information and we don't have a complete idea of what's taking place on the site or there's conflicting information, We are asking landowners to withdraw the FPA, and if they're choosing not to, at times we are disapproving those FPAs to ensure that we're getting accurate information so that reviewers and the general public also have accurate information. And that's essentially it. We're making our way through the process. Any additional questions?
Board Member Stanley.
The issue of the in and around, that's gotten some clarity now where people are comfortable in the field describing it?
They're getting more comfortable. You know, we've had some time now and opportunity to explain it in multiple TFW meetings, or they're actually coming into the region offices, working with our staff to better understand it. I won't say that all frustration has ceased. It's there at times, and we're working through that. We're also being, the large landowners have become more used to what we're asking for at this point. It's the small forest landowners that we're still definitely working with to help them understand, and whoever they're hiring as their qualified experts, again, making sure that they understand what we expect. So we're still working through things. It's not perfect, but we're making headway, and a lot less questions are coming in than were initially coming in.
Board Member Davies.
It sounds like you've changed some processes, if I understand the way you describe this update, is that your processes have changed, or doing some more different steps. And I'm just curious, like, it sounds like you're saying that it's working, and that you're, you know, when you need to, denying some or having that back and forth. And I just wondered if it feels like the revised process is working well, and you feel like you're on the path, or I just kind of want to see how you feel like this is working out.
I think we're on a good path. I mean, with anything that you do that's new, with a large group of landowners trying to implement it, it's confusing, and they want to make sure that they're providing accurate information. And of course, us as a government agency doesn't want to get into a process of find the right rock. So it's working through those paces so that we're working in tandem instead of against each other in the way of providing the information. And we've done that, and qualified experts are definitely working with us. The regions are seeing more complete paperwork coming in, so we're not having to ask for additional pieces. And some areas it's working seamlessly, and some areas we're still working through that, but it is working with the slope stability information form. It's probably the newest piece. With new rule, that's where the questions changed for in, for on, and around, in and around. I'm sorry, I just was very used to the old phrase. But so that was something new, but it was also initially landowners were thinking that a lot of things would require a SEPA checklist. And it depends, and that we don't like giving that type of answer, but it does depend on that particular site and what information is being supplied. But it is working smoother. We're seeing some definite advantages to it for DNR staff and for reviewers.
So you're getting more information from the landowners with which you can evaluate the FPAs and make decisions, and in some cases you're denying them. Do you feel like there's any difference in percentages, or is it about the same, just more information?
You know, we haven't had enough time to really look at percentages as far as it being fully in play. So after we get a full year of implementing this under our belt, then we'd be able to tease out some of that information. But right now, it's just, you know, feedback from our region staff, feedback from our qualified experts that are engaging with land and our qualified experts, and hearing that things are smoothing out.
I think, wouldn't it be fair to say that we're getting more information so that we can make better decisions on each of these, and there's still a lot of scrutiny on not just the landowner proposals, but on how we process these applications. And so it has caused not just the landowner community to really understand what is required, but it's also caused us to make sure that we are doing the right thing as far as having our qualified experts review their work, et cetera, so that we make the right decisions on the ground. Any other questions for Danelle?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to suggest we move on to staff reports. And the first one up, I'd like to call up Lauren Burns, please. Lauren and the subgroup of the NSLIT, Northern Squire Owl implementation team, has been working really hard on trying to get a, what do you call it? I don't have it spelled out here.
The programmatic safe harbor agreement?
A safe harbor agreement done by the end of the year. And so I've asked her to not just give us a process check like we usually get in our quarterly meeting, but actually to dig into some of the substance, because they're getting a lot closer now to actually hopefully bringing something for us to look at in February.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sparing me some time today to explain a little more about what the Safe Harbor work group has been up to for the past couple months. We've been meeting about every 2 to 3 weeks and getting insight from the Northern Squaw implementation team on how best to craft a programmatic, voluntary opt-in Safe Harbor agreement for the Northern Squaw Owl. So just to remind board members what the purpose of this was, you had directed the Northern Squaw Owl implementation team to enter into this agreement with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And the primary objective of this agreement is to incentivize private landowners to undertake voluntary conservation measures that will benefit the spotted owl by creating, maintaining, or enhancing its habitat. So while incentives is still a very important component of voluntary spotted owl conservation, we had met with landowners back in December several years ago, and a component of that inhibiting transactions is the risk of growing into additional federal regulations. So we're hoping that the way that this will work is DNR will apply for an umbrella permit, so to speak, and the enhancement of survival permit. And with that, we're opting to do additional analysis on the front end in hopes that we can limit the amount of back end analysis necessary for each landowner's enrollment. So the way it would work is the programmatic safe harbor agreement kind of sets the high level policy preferences for conservation measures that landowners could undertake. And that will guide their individual Safe Harbor Agreement enrollment instrument, specific name to be decided, what that enrollment instrument will be called. But it's basically an individual agreement, a case-by-case kind of application that a landowner will fill out in concert with DNR. And the protection, so to speak, that the landowner receives under that is called something called a certificate of inclusion. And it's basically a tiny one-pager, as you can see in the bottom left, that's just an example, that provides some of the federal assurances that anything that they do beneficially above baseline conditions would get protection under their enhancement of survival permit. And then our additional appeal to applying for this programmatic safe harbor agreement was the thought that if we do a NEPA environmental assessment rather than the typical categorical exclusion that occurs under safe harbor agreements, that it could hopefully do some streamlining for forest practices applications as well, specific to the owl SEPA trigger. So this is kind of how we see this process flowing. We create the high-level policy that informs the case-by-case negotiations with each landowner, and should that landowner fill out to any forest practices applications affiliated with their individual agreements, that would be guided by their Safe Harbor Enrollment Instrument and Certificate of Inclusion.
So how we see this working is we've been very broad in how we're designing this. We want this to appeal to as many landowners as possible. That we have both industry and small forest landowner representation on our Safe Harbor Work Group, as well as Conservation, Fish and Wildlife Service, and Department of Natural Resources and Department of Fish and Wildlife. So landowners of all shapes and sizes can voluntarily reach out to Department of Natural Resources if they want to participate in this agreement. And DNR, using their programmatic Safe Harbor agreement, as well as the environmental assessment, would use those kind of as sideboards of the possible, and the landowner would negotiate an individual Safe Harbor enrollment agreement. And should everything check out and be approved, then they receive umbrella protections for that time as well. And because it is a voluntary agreement, we also want to craft it in such a way that landowners also have the flexibility to opt out if for whatever reason they realize that this just doesn't work for them anymore. So we're carefully crafting it to make sure that we're not running afoul of mitigation debt, because the main differences between a Safe Harbor agreement and a habitat conservation plan under the Endangered Species Act is a habitat conservation plan allows for mitigation debt because you're offsetting it somewhere else. With a Safe Harbor agreement, you're doing everything above baseline, so there would be no mitigation debt. You're only doing better than current state. So that unfortunately kind of hinders some creative thinking, but I don't think to the extent that we can't still craft something that will work for interested landowners. So, I mean, ultimately it's a contract, and there's a lot of components to it, but the process that we've been following so far is to develop the baseline, basically what is the forest conditions on the ground that must receive protection for the entire duration of the agreement. That which you cannot incur mitigation debt on. And once you've figured out what needs to stay, you identify conservation measures, options that landowners can voluntarily take and choose from, to provide something called a net conservation benefit, which is basically the articulation of how you anticipate this being better than current state. And then there's also all other Safe Harbor agreement components as well. So this is not the Safe Harbor agreement skeleton. This is just an example of what is usually included in a programmatic Safe Harbor agreement. But we've been focusing so far on defining baseline, identifying conservation measures, and we're now moving into the net conservation benefit portion of our deliberations with the expectation that we should hopefully have by the end of the year a draft programmatic Safe Harbor agreement document, basically filling in all those blanks for the Fish and Wildlife Service by the end of the year, and that we would start to begin the NEPA environmental assessment process immediately thereafter. So just to go into a little more detail on these words that I throw around, baseline. The Fish and Wildlife Service's Safe Harbor policy defines baseline conditions as population estimates and distribution and or habitat characteristics and determined area of any old property that sustains seasonal or permanent use by the covered species at the time the Safe Harbor agreement is executed. And as I said earlier, baseline must be protected for the duration of the agreement, and mitigation debt is not allowed. And as I said a little earlier, net conservation benefit. Basically, how are you making the habitat better than no action, basically? So just from a very high level, to borrow from the Oregon Department of Forestry's programmatic Safe Harbor agreement, they had kind of articulated some net conservation benefits as goals that landowners could try to aim for, related to anything including maintaining, restoring, or enhancing habitat, increasing habitat connectivity and reducing fragmentation, maintaining or increasing species population numbers, buffering protected areas, testing conservation strategies, and reducing the potential effects of catastrophic events. So this is kind of a preview of the net conservation benefit conversations, but these are kind of some high-level goals that the conservation measures that a landowner would undertake would hopefully feed into those higher-level goals. So as far as what the conservation measures are, currently we are defining that as actions that protect and retain existing habitat that is not part of the baseline, or recruit and retain future spotted owl habitat. So we've kind of binned this and recognize this is all a draft, and will ultimately have to be green-lighted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So you know, take it with a grain of salt. Forest management related to habitat development, maintenance, and enhancement. But in all cases, there is a requirement to protect baseline habitat on enrolled properties. So basically, no net loss, but also no mitigation debt, only above baseline conservation activities. And we're considering something called future conservation measures that we're still kind of working through these issues, but we recognize that science can change in the future, and we want this programmatic to be hopefully adaptable to that. So crafting in some sort of option for conservation measures that we just haven't thought of yet, that a landowner could propose in the future, that should the Fish and Wildlife Service and DNR and DFW landowner all agree that it's a good thing to do, that there would be flexibility to do that. And also not included in the safe harbor agreement is barred owl removal. This is something that we had deliberated with the Northern Spot Owl Implementation Team. I also checked in with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. While the service is undergoing barred owl removal experiments, we're still probably about a decade away from there being some sort of depredation order on a programmatic scale. In order for us to have included barred owl removal as a conservation option in this programmatic agreement, we would have had to apply for a Migratory Bird Treaty Act permit on top of our Enhancement Survival Permit. And so at this point in time, we're recognizing that it's something that will need to happen in concert with other conservation measures for the spotted owl, but that nothing's stopping a landowner from individually negotiating a barred owl removal safe harbor agreement with the services. It's just not a component of this safe harbor agreement. So I thought I'd put together a couple sketches to help conceptualize what this would look like in play. If you're a landowner that does not have baseline and decide that you want to participate in this programmatic safe harbor agreement, your starting point is baseline is zero. You're going to, you know, pick from a list of conservation measures and come up with a plan of how those conservation measures are going to be generating that conservation benefit. So you can see that it kind of grows and accrues over time. And then at the end of the agreement, before it expires, landowner has the option at that point in time to harvest back down to those baseline conditions. So the draw of that being, that would have been spotted owl habitat that would have never occurred on the landscape otherwise, because of the risk of run into ESA restrictions. So that you're providing a temporal benefit, but you're also providing operational flexibility for the landowner to receive protection for removing that incidental take of that net conservation benefit for those specific actions. So if you have baseline, if you do have current seasonally or occupied habitat, we'll get into the details later, you would start with your baseline commitment. So that kind of green, slightly darker box on the bottom has to persist through time for the duration of the agreement. You can't go below that. But you can grow net conservation benefit on top of that and then remove that net conservation benefit should you choose and receive protection for that. So by the end of it, you're no further than you were before, but you've provided an additional temporal benefit while also protecting current habitat. Now, if you don't have baseline, but want to offer an elevated baseline as a net conservation benefit, and a net conservation benefit is kind of an end point as far as benefit has been achieved, now I can harvest. Sometimes you can reach a net conservation benefit sooner, that kind of desired future state, by agreeing for whatever reason to set aside additional acres. Perhaps the landowner gets a conservation easement and is no longer planning to harvest that, they can get credit. So you can see they didn't have baseline to start, but they grew additional habitat that kind of characterized as the definition of baseline habitat, and they decide that they're going to leave that even at the end of the agreement, whether they did conservation easement or for whatever reason they decided they don't want to harvest. So that's something that would probably require incentives to implement, but is you know, an option of growing additional habitat that's currently not on the landscape, and also finding ways to keep that new grown habitat on the landscape if we incentivize it. So that was a lot all at once, so feel free to ask questions now.
Board Member Davies.
Thank you. That was really helpful. And I'm just curious about the incentives. I don't know if it's limited to the
Can you speak into my phone?
Sorry. I guess I just would like to know more about the incentives and if they're really just focused on the regulations and or the permitting, and that that is made easier with commitments to grow habitat, or if there are incentives that go beyond that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the programmatic safe harbor agreement is just one kind of piece of that larger incentivization puzzle, getting at the issue of regulatory disincentives to kind of grow into that additional ESA restriction. The Northern Spotted Owl implementation team has been meeting for years on the topic of incentives and recognize that both kind of have to go hand in hand. And I do know that at our previous Northern Spotted Owl implementation team meeting 2 or 3 weeks ago, I can't remember, all blurs together, they had decided that the priority should still be to focus most energies on developing this programmatic safe harbor agreement and just getting it out the door, able for landowners to apply as they wish, and then to refocus back on what that incentive mechanism is, both for enrollment or just for general conservation. So we've seen with the Oregon Department of Forestry, the Home Forest Reserve Program, there's WASP, there's other sorts of creative ways to think about incentivizing this, which has certainly been a component of the Northern Spotted Owl implementation team's discussions.
So right now it's focused on the permit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, but you just mentioned ROSP for the Rivers Habitat Open Space Program. Could that be used as an incentive?
Potentially, yeah, especially in the scenario where a landowner currently doesn't have baseline habitat and decides to grow additional habitat and decides that perhaps they don't want to harvest that habitat by the end of their baseline, that they could get some sort of conservation easement for that additional habitat. Or if conservation banking ever takes off, there are options there, carbon banking, other sorts of opportunities. But I'd be happy to resend to the board the NSOIT's packet on all the incentive mechanisms that we had looked into, be it working force conservation easements or bond programs or other sorts of incentives. So it's certainly been a component of the conversation, but figuring out what that it is probably be more of a buffet than something singular.
Can you go back a slide? Yeah, so for example, one suggestion might be using WASP to put an easement on the elevated baseline, for example.
Totally, right? Yeah, once that habitat becomes habitat, if you incentivize it prior to the landowner harvesting, that would definitely be an opportunity to grow.
And could you use that same model if your baseline wasn't zero, but you ended up with an elevated baseline?
Yeah, I imagine. I mean, with the
agreement.
Yeah, not to speak specifically for ROSP, but
right,
you know, theirs is focused on SEPA triggers. I imagine, off the top of my head, the baseline habitat would be pretty similar. But you know, we have to think creatively about how to incentivize landowners from engaging in these sorts of incentive transactions.
Is the ROSP that you're talking about, the regional open space, and is there money behind that? Do they have some money to incentivize?
Correct. Yeah. Well, the current program, it's called Rivers Habitat Open Space Program, has the program I talked about earlier, about the legislative ask for $6.2 million.
Okay, there's a different
cover
with the same
action. Oh, okay. All right. Other board members?
Back to safe harbor agreements. Do you have any idea of how attractive that's going to be to landowners, either by number or by acres?
So it's been a long time since we've done a landowner conservation survey. I think we did one a couple years ago and had just a small response rate. But that's something that the Northern Spotted Owl implementation team should probably do some more direct engagement on.
Just
but
curious
currently
where
no numbers.
Might go. Seems all good, but the whole, it doesn't mean anything if people don't want to take advantage of it.
Totally. And at the same time, our thought being, nothing's stopping landowners from entering into these transactions individually with the Fish and Wildlife Service and crafting an agreement that makes most sense
but
to them.
Doing
but doing this programmatically, hopefully, would provide some streamlining for the landowner so that we can hopefully increase beneficial transactions while recognizing landowner flexibility needs.
What's the range of the length of the agreements that you're talking about?
So I've seen most programmatic safe harbor agreements last about 50 years, but it probably, so there's three timelines. There's the entire timeline for the enhancement of survival permit, and I think those can go up to 99 years, and we don't know how long we want that to be for, 50, 90, whatever. The second timeline is how long can a landowner enter into a safe harbor agreement? Is it 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? Do we want to have a plethora of options, or do we just want to have a straight up 40 years kind of thing? So we're still trying to figure that out as well. And then lastly, the net conservation benefit. How long is it going to take to accrue net conservation benefit? There are some activities where a landowner can improve habitat very quickly, and it takes just a couple years. Whereas if there's no habitat and you're starting from nothing, that's going to take a lot longer to reach that benefit. So it's really case by case.
Any other questions from board members? I just want to thank Lauren. She continues to plow ahead on this under some guidance from Aaron Everett. This is one piece that I haven't been able to delve 100% into yet, so I really appreciate all the hard work she does on this.
Thank you, and much appreciated to the Safe Harbor Work Group members. Definitely can't do it without them, and really appreciate their insight on trying to make this work for both the owl and for the landowner. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, somebody asked previously what the backlog on preps were. There's 137 backlogs. And our average acquisition for 50-year easements is $100,000. So, anyway.
Need a bit more funding.
Yeah, that's why we're asking for the 10 million. Okay. Before we leave staff reports, board member Store, or if you'd like Terry to come up, if you read in your board packets, State Fish and Wildlife was going to recommend to the Fish and Wildlife Commission uplisting of the Canadian lynx and marlin murrelet. Can you give us, you or Terry, give us an update on that?
I think Terry abandoned me, so you
didn't need. All right.
And Mr. Chair, we are looking at 5-year reviews on 46 different species. That's a WAC or a RCW requirement. And the latest review with our commission took place just a week ago, where we made the recommendations about the lynx and about the marbled murrelets in terms of uplisting. And took public comment, and so a decision will be made in December by the commission as to whether or not to uplist. And then we're starting some preliminary discussions with DNR and with others around what that might mean. You know, what are some of the opportunities that are out there to help those species, and you know, who needs to be involved, et cetera. Just barely starting that discussion, so.
Thank you. Any questions from board members for board members Store on this? Okay. Thank you. Then I would ask Mark to come back up. Because as normally, we need to consider our work plan for the next year. And based on the motions we passed earlier today, that will impact his proposed work plan, I'm sure.
So good afternoon again. I'm Mark Tingle. And I
this is the time when the board every year sets their regular meeting dates for the next calendar year as well as the next year's work plan. The board's work plan is done on a calendar year basis, not a fiscal year basis. First order of business is to affirmation from the board, and that this is contained within the cover memos for this topic. In rule, the board meets on the second Wednesday of February, and then May, August, and November. This year's dates would be February 8th, May 10th, August 9th, and November 8th. With affirmation from the board, then the staff will file this with the Office of Code Advisor, put it in the Washington State Register so the public is aware. And you need to open the Public Meeting Act, and the public is aware of your scheduled regular meeting dates. Hold that till the end. The other thing is we looked at the 2016 work plan. This was our last meeting in 2016. That is also within your materials. Despite what it may seem from time to time, we really did get just about everything done on the work plan. It's rather impressive to look at the end of the year. There were a few things that were delayed, the first being the Cultural Resources Roundtable annual report. That was delayed because of the current facilitated process that's going on regarding cultural resources. And then we put a rulemaking on hold because of workload. That was what we call the board's practices and procedures rulemaking. Now, to go on to the proposed draft 2017 work plan. As a result of today, there probably will need to be some amendments. Before the amendments, I'd like to point out some of the features of this work plan, as you're aware. Ken Miller came up earlier this afternoon in general public and brought forward the fact that we are still working towards a small forest landowner low-impact template for Western Washington. That is the first item under the adaptive management program list with a February completion date. We have more work to do, but that is the date that is currently here. I also want to point out that you will get updates regarding the Senior Master Project schedule, the progress. The HMPA will come up in February and November. However, in May, as the board chair has pointed out, the board does need to approve the 2017-19 master project schedule and then the associated budget for the next biennium. Also, we have maintained the TFW Policy Committee's Type N recommendations. It's been put on hold for a variety of reasons, including the Type F permanent water type D system. It is still, we're maintaining it on the schedule. However, we don't have a completion date. It's open right now, but we're keeping it there. So the board is aware that that is an unfinished item before policy. Under the annual reports, it's the usual annual reports with their usual dates. We did include this year the 303D listing update. That would be from Ecology. At the February meeting. I'll go a little bit out of order. Under the rulemaking, we did put Type F rulemaking, and then under board manual, section 23, perhaps optimistically, we put them at November of next year, a year from now. But it's important to maintain these on the work plan. We will need to add some tasks as a result of your series of motions that you passed today. And then I guess that's all that really needs to be pointed out. The remainder of this is, again, the usual items that come before the board, the agenda items. As a result of today, then, I would recommend that the board add some tasks under the adaptive management program for the February meeting, your February meeting, and that would be, and I think these, but we put them on and then amend them as necessary depending on what happens. But adding additional development and policy recommendations and presentation to the board for off-channel habitat, the water type modification form points and physicals, that report to the board at the February meeting. Also a report to the February meeting regarding the policy decisions related to the funding for the model and the physicals. So those would be two additions to the work plan. And with that, I'll take pause for questions or conversation.
Any questions from the board members regarding this work plan? I do. I have one. So on the very first one, what is the likelihood that we actually, that the adaptive management program will be bringing recommendations to the board in February on the West Side template?
So it you see there by the asterisk, I think we need to just revisit for a moment the motion. So this is a result of a proposal initiation brought forward to the board by WFFA. And the first task that the board asked policy to do was first to determine if we could address the proposal as an alternate plan, and then to give the board a timeline for the completion of that. This item is that the acceptance, can it become an alternate plan template for inclusion board manual section 21, and then what is policy's proposed timeline to complete that task?
Okay.
And again, perhaps February may be a little optimistic, but okay. Perhaps optimism is good.
Any other questions from board members? Board member Janicki, excuse me.
It seems like we punted a lot of things to the main meeting, and I just wonder, as we're looking at calendar, whether we should, at this point, identify another two-day session and starting with a work session. It's just easier, I know, on a lot of calendars if we block it out earlier than later.
Specifically for May?
Seems like May, but you probably have a better sense of, I don't know if it's February or May, or both.
Or August.
Or August.
Or next year.
Election day next year.
I think it would be a good idea to put a placeholder on the calendar for May, but I don't know whether we need to include that in the motion or not, and then play it by ear as we see what kind of a report back we get from policy in February as to how many disputes we've got going and what status they are. And the likelihood that we're going to have a whole bunch of material to go through in May. That's a good idea on your part to suggest that.
I just know when I hand off, you know, to my scheduling staff, my clerk, and it's just better if she's blocked, you know, she's blocked ahead of time. I don't know how the people's calendars work, but I can work around something that's set up ahead.
Okay.
On that note, I just wanted to add that if we do another two-day session or a field trip to move that, I just want to invite everyone to come out to the east side.
I just realized we forgot a field trip for next year.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, we definitely need to put that on here.
It's on, but there's no date.
It is?
Yeah.
It's on him.
No date.
But we could do that in May.
The mud's dried out by then, huh?
Over on our side.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Well, that's certainly something that we can consider. The question is, you know, on board field trips, we've got to figure out the logistics and whether we want to do a field trip separate from the board meeting or combine it together or not. Because there's a whole bunch of logistics of having a meeting. So staff will take that under advisement. Right?
So when we talk logistics, if I might,
yes.
The small forest landowners tour logistically is very close to here.
Correct.
What do you want us to consider, a spring or a fall?
I think we need to look at the calendar, look at what's coming up, and decide what we can work out. And then maybe come back with a recommendation in February.
February, okay.
Any other comments from board members on the work plan for next year? Cool. Can we have a motion, please? Patricia? Can I have a motion, please, from one of the board members? Board Member Store.
I'll move the Forest Practices Board approve updates to the 2017 board work plan as a result of actions taken today.
Second, please.
Second.
Board Member Little. Any other discussion? So are we clear on what we're voting on?
So the, just to clarify, because we didn't capture it here, so we will add under the adaptive management program, two reports for the February meeting regarding the from policy regarding optional habitat, water type mod form points, and physicals is one. And then the other report is regarding the $500,000 for science, whether it has policy approval and its clarification as to what will be done. That would be an addition. DNR staff will come back with a recommendation for the field tour date, either spring or fall. Are we also considering an additional meeting date for May to hear all of the information coming forward? I don't know if that was finalized or not.
But why don't we put a placeholder on the calendar, so a two-dayer in May. And always.
And then the final thing is the dates as listed for next year's board meetings will be, are finalized and it will be on the state register.
Okay. Board Member Davies?
We have time for just a brief discussion before we vote. A lot of the discussions today about policy and somewhat CEMER and the work plan, and we have so much work to do, and the discussions around getting to consensus or not and how we're going to get there. I just wanted to say I know everyone has worked so hard, and now it's back to the work table and to keep at it. And yesterday and today we talked a little bit about recommitment, and just in the spirit of the day, I thought I would just remind us all, whether it's CEMER or policy, the board, the staff, you know, we're all on the same team and we're all shooting for the same end game. And it seems, I'm just reflecting on what Ray said about recommitting to the process, and I wasn't sure where to make the comment, but just since we're talking about the work plan for next year, I just really hope that we'll take some time before the next meeting, before the next policy and CEMER meetings, to really reflect on that and make some recommitments of the team here and really see if we can get this, keep on this track of getting a lot of work done and meeting our deadlines. thank you for doing that.
Any other comments from board members? Okay, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes. Two more items. First of all, I don't know how many of you are aware of it, but the gentleman to my left has resigned from the board as of tomorrow. Correct?
Correct.
Because he has another commitment that starts in about a week.
Correct.
So I just wanted to thank Cork for all his hard work on the board, and we've put a plaque together for him, and I just want to thank him for being a great board member and working with him.
Just to grandstand a little bit, I have perversely enjoyed this board and the challenges and working for solutions, but to echo Bren's point, I do think looking back and reinvigorating TFW and the ground rules that go with TFW, and I think I heard a bit of a cry from Ray, not a cry, an admonition, and everything. I think it would be prudent and helpful early next year if we had the principal sit down with policy and set expectations, accountability, and guidelines. I think we'd go a long ways to pushing this to a successful conclusion in May. So, done. But thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I have the pleasure of asking everybody to clear the room because we're going to go into executive session for a few minutes. And specifically, the purpose of the executive session is to discuss with legal counsel representing the board litigation or potential litigation involving the board or its members. And it will take about 20 minutes. And then we will come back and adjourn.
Sherry, can you on your way out? Or what are you saying?
Where's all this stuff?
On both of those doors, and I'll do this.
A couple of board members need to take a rest, so let's come back at 25 till or so.
Just making sure I have a laser in case I
I just didn't hear you on the vote, so.
Oh yeah, I was on mute.
Okay.
when I said yay, but I assumed that